The first time I watched the Peruvian soccer team in person was in Los Angeles in 2009, when they played a friendly game against El Salvador. I was 21. The rain poured on us as we watched our team lose. I was there with my dad and a couple of other family members, and we were some of the only Peruvians soaking in a sea of blue and white. We cheered as loud as we could. My dad and I stood in the stands until the very end, hoping for a goal. But that moment never came. He stayed quiet. He probably saw it coming. Losing was nothing new. The other day I asked my dad, "Remember that game we lost 7-0? The one we watched in the rain?" He told me I was being dramatic and to Google it. It was actually just 1-0. But the loss seemed so much bigger and much more drastic in my head. We were the kind of team that would lose 7-0. The year after that rainy game, we ended up dead last in the South American qualifiers for the 2010 World Cup. I guess that pretty much sums up my memories of the Peruvian national team, losing one game after another. Until last year, when everything finally changed.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, Peru goes to Russia to fulfill its World Cup dreams, and so does our producer, Janice Yamoka. Over the past few weeks, just about everyone on the planet has been wrapped up in World Cup fever. And this year, it wasn't only the usual teams who were playing. You know, teams like Mexico, Argentina, Brazil. In fact, you could say that the 2018 Cup was the year of the underdogs, like Panama, which qualified for its first ever World Cup. Little Iceland also qualified for the first time, and Egypt qualified after 28 long years. But the underdog we're going to talk about today is Peru and their return to the World Cup after 36 long years. Producer Janice Yamoka is going to tell us the story.
Before we get started, there's a few things you should know about me. One, I was born in Los Angeles. California. And two, I'm Peruvian American. That's my dad, Pepe. He's tall, in his 60s, with barely any white hairs, and a bit of a reserved guy. He grew up in Peru in a city called Callao. He said that he and my mom taught me a lot about Peruvian culture. My parents left Peru in the mid-80s when the country was going through an economic and social crisis. For my parents, there wasn't a lot of time to learn what American culture was. So I was immersed in Peruvian culture growing up. For example, when my sister and I were kids, my dad would play Peruvian music for us all the time in the house. Especially on the weekends when he would make ceviche. I kind of felt like I lived in a Peruvian restaurant. Aside from music, we ate lomo saltado, drank Inca Kola, and at one point, we had a replica of a gold tumi, a Peruvian ceremonial knife nailed to a wall. Oh, and I can't forget the collection of llama dolls we have scattered around the house. And of course, when they could, my parents took us on an 8-hour plane ride to go play with all of our cousins that lived more than 4,000 miles away in Peru.
Entonces, todas esas cosas les han quedado a ustedes y yo pienso que eso sí, digamos.
All this to say, like my dad said, it's all a part of why my sister and I feel so Peruvian.
Como si fueran peruanas.
Being Peruvian was rare in Los Angeles, where almost every brown person is assumed to be Mexican. But a little Peru existed within the walls of my family's home. Oh, and one last thing. My dad also passed on his love for soccer, specifically Peruvian soccer. Every Saturday morning, I would wake up to the sounds of...
Goal!
Love and loyalty for the Peruvian national soccer team was practically a religion I was born into. And though it pains me to say, for my entire life, Peru has sucked at soccer. See, soccer is a lifestyle in Latin America, and Latin Americans pride themselves on playing it well. Countries like Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, they're not famous just for playing soccer, but playing it with their own signature style. And every 4 years, they go to the World Cup to show the world what they can do. Peru had never even qualified for a World Cup in my lifetime. But for my dad, it was different. He was there during a golden age of Peruvian soccer in the 1970s, when Peru made it back to the World Cup for the first time since 1930. My dad was 16 when it happened.
La gente de mi edad o gente mayores salían a las calles a hacer caravanas y...
He remembers people of all ages came together on the streets to cheer and run. There were parties everywhere.
Fiestas por aquí, por allá, en todo lugar. Sí. Pero fue emocionante también.
My dad says it was exciting, and I know you can't tell from his voice, but it was exciting. And he says he remembers it like yesterday, because soccer is his life.
Recuerdo todas esas cosas como si fuera ayer, porque esa ha sido mi vida. El fútbol es mi vida también.
The country went on to qualify for 3 World Cups in those years. And they even had special songs to motivate the team on the way to each cup. There's Peru Campeón, Peru the Champion, for the 1970 World Cup.
Peru Campeón, Peru Campeón.
Contigo Peru, with you Peru, for the 1978 World Cup.
Y así triunfaremos contigo, Perú.
And Perú a España 82, Peru to Spain 82, which, you guessed it, was composed for the 1982 World Cup in Spain.
Peru, España 82.
And that's where it ended. In the years that followed, the country suffered economically, and violence within the country began to rise.
Esta semana, los terroristas de Sendero Luminoso atacaron
because of armed insurgent groups like the Shining Path.
Y mataron a 3 infantes de Marina en la zona.
This is around the time my parents left Peru and headed to the U.S. in search of a better life.
Es el dolor más grande que tuve, ¿no? De dejar a mi mamá en Perú y yo venirme para los Estados Unidos.
My dad says the hardest part about leaving Peru was leaving his mom, my grandmother, behind.
El 8 de diciembre
then,
de 1987, una tragedia aérea conmovió a todo Perú.
In the midst of the chaos, a plane carrying one of Peru's beloved club teams crashed into the Pacific Ocean, killing an entire team of promising young players. It was as if the dreams of the nation crashed into the Pacific as well. The country was heartbroken. It continued to suffer economically, and political chaos continued. For the people, it felt like in every single aspect, Peru's just not good enough. In the U.S., my parents settled in San Gabriel Valley, east of Los Angeles, living in apartments stuffed with family and friends who also made the trek from Peru. There, they began to form their own little community, and they kept their culture alive through music, food, and of course, cheering for the Peruvian national team. But the 70s soccer golden age marked the last time my whole family was together in Peru. And every time they share their stories, I'm instantly transported to that frozen era in time, before families were apart, before loved ones started dying. And for me, I love hearing those stories, to imagine a happier time for both the Peruvian team and my family. But it's bittersweet, because I never actually experienced any of it. But then, for the first time in my lifetime, Peru had a real chance. Qualifiers were underway to determine which teams would make it to the 2018 World Cup in Russia.
It's important to remember that at the beginning of these qualifiers, Peru was not doing well.
That's Luis Miguel Echegaray. He's the director of Latino content at Sports Illustrated, and he's Peruvian too.
We actually only won 2 matches out of the first 10.
But then... Peru beat soccer powerhouse Uruguay in the 5th-to-last qualifying game.
Peruano!
I do believe that Uruguay at home win was when Peruvians started saying, hold up a second, maybe we can do this.
I watched the game alone through a live stream on my laptop in my apartment in New York City, on the other side of the country from my family in LA. It was around this time I jokingly but semi-seriously called my dad and told him, if Peru goes to the World Cup, we're going. And he said yes, just to shut me up, I think. If you're not familiar with how teams qualify for the World Cup, consider this your quick lesson. There are only 32 spots in the World Cup. To get a spot, countries within each region compete against each other. So, European teams play against European teams, and Asian teams play against Asian teams, etc. And the South American qualifiers are arguably the most competitive. To make it to the World Cup, Peru would have to survive among soccer giants like Brazil and Argentina. This team had no well-known international stars, no Messis, no Neymars. But we did have Paolo Guerrero, a player with bad boy vibes, tattooed with slick back hair, and Peru's all-time leading scorer. And so, with a few games left, our World Cup dream almost seemed possible. And soon, the team found themselves facing two-time World Cup champions, Argentina.
Le va a dar Messi. Messi busca centro. Sale el arquero. Buena. Arriba. Controló el arquero peruano.
And they tied. Meanwhile, in the Latino USA office,
the only thing I know about soccer is something about Peru is a big deal. Basically because of you.
I'd say like maybe, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like once a week you wear your jersey.
That's producers Maggie Freeling and Antonia Cerejido. They and everyone else in the office witnessed me being completely obsessed with Peru in the World Cup qualifiers. Like I would bring the Peru flag to the office and hang it up on a wall on game days. Totally normal. By October, Peru was on a roll. They hadn't lost a game in 5 matches, but they had one game left against Colombia.
Tiene que tirar el centro, Paolo.
Me gustó que Paolo busque la pelota ahí.
Es tiro libre indirecto, Paolo. Es tiro libre indirecto. Tiro libre indirecto. Tiro libre indirecto. Gol!
Which, thanks to a beautiful free kick from our captain Paolo, ended up in a tie. After all that fun math and all the points were added, we were in 5th place. So close. See, the way it works is that the first 4 South American teams go straight to the World Cup. And the 5th place team only goes to the World Cup if they play a 2-game playoff series against the top team in Oceania. In this case, New Zealand. But a week before the first game against New Zealand, news breaks out.
Paolo Guerrero fue suspendido 30 días.
Paolo Guerrero, the bad boy player I described earlier, and Peru's team captain, he was suspended by FIFA for 30 days for failing a doping test. Chemicals associated with cocaine were found in his system.
So before the Argentina game, Paolo Guerrero drank a mate de coca.
I know, it sounds shady, but Paolo claimed he accidentally drank mate de coca, or coca tea, which is a traditional tea from Andean nations like Peru and Bolivia. It's used to help with high altitudes. And since cocaine is derived from coca leaves, the tea has chemicals in it that can trigger doping tests. Either way, Paolo Guerrero was going to miss the playoffs. He helped the team get there, and it was up to the rest of the team to get to the World Cup. The first game, nobody scored, which put all the pressure on the second game. This was the game that would decide it all. I even felt the pressure. So I did something a little extreme. On a whim, I flew across the country back home to my own little Peru to watch the game with my family in LA. If we won, we were going to the World Cup. My family packed the living room, all in red and white. My dad was on air horn duty. The game was tied 0-0. Then, in the 28th minute,
when Cristian Cueva held the ball, passed it to Farfán, the country just went insane.
In Peru, the celebration of people jumping and screaming after Farfán's goal was so intense, it activated an earthquake alarm detector in Chile.
That's when we started thinking, this is it, we're making it.
In LA, my family and I were glued to the screen. The clock was ticking, and Peru scored again. We won 2-0. We were the last country in the world to qualify. We were in. Peru was going to the 2018 World Cup in Russia. I love this team, not because I grew up in Peru, but because I grew up immersed in my family's love for their country, and especially their love for the family they had to leave behind in Peru. So when I hear this tape of my cousin crying, it's almost impossible for me to not start crying myself. And it's because I know, in that moment, she was probably thinking about her father, who passed away, and how ecstatic he would have been in that moment to see Peru make it. How she wished she could have had that moment with him. Everyone in my house gave each other big hugs that day, and I hugged my dad extra tight.
Coming up on Latino USA, the Yamokas go to Russia. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Babbel, a language program that quickly teaches real-life conversations in a new language. Choose from Spanish, French, Italian, German, and more. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons use interactive dialogues and speech recognition technology to get you speaking your new language correctly and confidently. Try Babbel for free by downloading the app or going to Babbel, Babbel.com.
When the Supreme Court heard the travel ban case this spring,
Donald Trump, President of the United States versus Hawaii,
one family's story came up in oral argument.
This is a 10-year-old daughter in Yemen with cerebral palsy who wants to come to the United States to save her life. And she can't.
What happens to that girl and her family? On the next Embedded, on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And when we left off, Peru had just qualified for the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. Producer Janice Yamoka picks up the story now.
The day after Peru qualified, I was still a ball of emotions. I took out my recorder and talked to my dad at home in our kitchen. He says that now the world will know that Peru has what it takes to face any team. It was time to remind my dad about the deal we made, that if Peru made it, the two of us were going to the World Cup.
Bueno, ¿vamos a Russia?
Claro, si se puede, sí, podemos irnos.
So we're going to Russia, I asked. And he said, sure, if we can. So I bought our plane tickets a week later. He was going on the ultimate father-daughter soccer adventure, and there was no turning back. A few weeks before the World Cup, I went into a recording booth at the Latino USA office.
This is a dream that's coming true, and it's weird. I'm still kind of in shock that I'm going to go in a few weeks, and maybe that's why it hasn't hit me.
And this envelope, I have another envelope and I haven't opened it yet, but I believe that they're my tickets. Let's see. Okay, they're for sure my tickets. I learned the team chants and even memorized the Peruvian national anthem. I mean, if I'm going, I'm going all the way. My dad and I even learned some Russian.
Нет, да. Спасибо. Thank you.
Спасибо, güey.
That's all I know. That's all we're getting.
Vamos a traer más palabras de.
Then, a month before the World Cup started, FIFA ruled that Paolo Guerrero, our captain and star player, wasn't going to play in the World Cup because of the doping test. Without him, we didn't have much of a chance to do well in the tournament. We were devastated.
There were protests in Peru.
Realizar una marcha en apoyo al capitán de la selección. Hombres, mujeres y niños.
And literally, 2 weeks before the tournament started, he was finally and officially cleared to play. Okay, now that we have our star player and my dad and I are fluent in Russian, World Cup, here we come. The plane ride to Moscow was everything you would imagine a World Cup flight to be. Everyone was already wearing their team's jerseys, except my dad and I, who seemed like World Cup rookies in our regular clothes. The fans were basically split into two groups, Peru and Mexico.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Moscow. Our aircraft has landed.
It was the day before the World Cup started, and fans spilled all over the city. At this point, people were just thrilled to be there. Everyone seemed hopeful, and it was contagious. At the end of a long main street, my dad and I finally found the Peru fans. On the streets, Peru fans dressed up as Inca royalty wore traditional clothing from the areas they came from, and Peruvian Facebook showed there was a llama around Moscow that went viral. Well, it was a man wearing a llama costume, only to be eclipsed by another man dressed as a giant cuy, aka a guinea pig, a Peruvian delicacy. Hola.
Hola.
We had a few days in Moscow before we had to travel for the first game against Denmark. I had an extra special surprise for my dad. I took him to meet a Peruvian soccer legend.
Bueno, mi nombre es Teófilo Cubillas.
Peruvian player Teófilo Cubillas. He was part of the 70s Dream Team.
Y tuve la felicidad de haber podido participar en tres Copas del Mundo.
You know, the team that took Peru to 3 World Cups, and someone my dad admires when it comes to Peruvian soccer. Teófilo is still one of Peru's leading scorers. We met him at his hotel in Moscow. He was there with Telemundo Deportes as an analyst for the matches.
Porque también había expresado, dije, ojalá que antes de yo tener que partir de este mundo, pueda volver.
Teófilo said that he hoped before he left this world, he would be able to see the Peruvian national team play in a World Cup again. And he finally got that opportunity. As for my dad, he had the chance to tell one of the players how happy the team made him back when he was living in Peru in the 70s. He kept it cool, kind of. He asked for an autograph before we left.
Yo te he visto jugar mucho tiempo en todos los mundiales. Me sentía, digamos, feliz. Y ahorita me siento más feliz todavía porque te he conocido personalmente.
No, al contrario, o sea...
And now I feel even happier because I've met you personally, my dad tells Teófilo. No, on the contrary, says Teófilo. Watching them talk, I felt like I was living a little piece of the golden era in real time. Anyway, it's time for the games. Peru's first game against Denmark was taking place in a city called Saransk. The first game was crucial. If Peru beat Denmark, we could possibly advance to the next round. And late in the first half, we had a clear chance of scoring our first World Cup goal in almost 4 decades. The referee called a penalty in Peru's favor. Cristian Cueva stepped up to the ball, kicked, and completely missed. The ball flew over the post and into the crowd. They ended up losing to Denmark 0-1. The next game was played in Ekaterinburg. Peru was facing France this time. My dad and I met up with Peru fans and walked and sang together as a unit to the stadium. France was going to be Peru's toughest opponent yet in this group stage. It was getting close to kickoff time. I asked my dad how he was feeling. ¿Cómo te sientes?
Yo me siento me siento, digamos, como si fuera, yo me olvidé de mi edad ahorita. Estoy acá en el mundial divirtiéndome.
He said it's like he's forgotten his age, that he's having fun, and that no one can take away the happiness he's feeling.
Esa alegría no me va a quitar nadie.
Being here, surrounded by Peru fans, makes my dad feel at home. At this point, my dad spent more than half of his life outside of Peru.
Mi sangre es peruana y yo puedo
he says he'll
americano,
never forget Peru, allá, and that his blood is Peruvian. Trust me, it sounds poetic in Spanish. He says a part of him will always belong there. It's hard to explain, but it's always felt like a part of me has always belonged in Peru too, even though I wasn't born there.
También siento este pasión y este orgullo, ¿no? Para un país que nunca he vivido en.
Claro.
Con un país que lo siento como de ustedes. Mm-hmm. Ustedes me dan este orgullo.
What I'm saying to my dad is that I also feel this passion and pride for a country I've never even lived in. I feel it because you and mom gave me that pride. My love for Peru is also my love for my parents. When the anthem started, I was ready to sing. I wanted this moment to be special. I looked to my right, and my dad was singing his heart out. And the game began. The Peruvian squad held their ground, but France was able to score a goal in the 34th minute. And Peru lost 1-0. And just like that, we were officially out of the World Cup. There was no way to advance to the next round. The next day, I took out my recorder and talked about how I felt. When the game ended, I left the stadium, you know, and I held my dad's arm and I started crying. Tears were rolling down my cheeks, you know, and I told my dad, let's just go somewhere to watch the next game. And he looked at me and he was just like, you know, this is your first World Cup. So I understand that you're sad and that it hurts. But you have so many more to live through. And he's right. Maybe I'll have another chance to see Peru play at a World Cup. Maybe not. Whether we win or lose, I know I can always go back to my own little Peru in my parents' home in LA to cry and cheer for a team that has unified my family for so many generations, regardless of where we live.
Cuando despiertan mis ojos y veo que sigo viviendo contigo, Perú.
Our thanks to Janice Yamoca for that story. Peru did not advance past the group stage, but in the team's third and final World Cup game, they scored 2 goals against Australia and secured their first World Cup win since 1978. Janice, of course, watched that game from our office in Harlem, wearing her Peru jersey.
Contigo, Peru. Sobre mi pecho llevo tus colores y están mis amores. Contigo, Peru. Somos tus hijos y nos uniremos y así triunfaremos contigo, Peru. Unida la costa,
unida la costa,
unida la sierra,
unida la sierra,
unida la selva contigo, Perú. Unido el trabajo,
unido el trabajo,
unido el deporte,
unido el deporte,
unidos el norte, el centro y el sur.
Toma. This episode was reported by Janice Yamoka and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miel Macias, Sofia Paliza Carr, Antonia Cerejido, Andres Caballero, Maggie Freeling, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Fernanda Chavarri. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. And I'll see you there. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. The Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at heisingsimons.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Oh, Janice is in the office. Oh, they're talking about Peru. Oh, something's happening with Peru. Okay.
Hey, I want to tell you about something super exciting that's coming up, because this year Latino USA turns 25 years old. And we want to invite you to our birthday party. On Sunday, August 12th, we're teaming up with City Park's Summer Stage to celebrate with Grammy winner Jerry Rivera, New Yorican poet La Bruja,
even if you ain't Boricua, can I call you my peeps?
And famed percussionist Chembo Corniel. So come out, dance, and party with the Latino USA team in New York City's East River Park for free as we all get together to celebrate this important anniversary. I hope I'll see you there.
Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Peter Sagal. Come try the only show that treats the news the way it deserves to be treated, roughly, with lots of tasteless comments. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.